Welcome to Behind the Scenes with Brian, the podcast covering everything from engineering, mining, and mine waste management to whatever else may be on our minds. Pop in your headphones and don't forget to rate, subscribe, and share. And now, here is your host, Brian Ulrich.
Hey everyone, this is Brian, and this is Behind the Scenes with Brian. And today I'm joined by Vikram Yadav. Vikram, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Brian. Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, really well. And where are you today?
So I am joining you this morning from Vancouver, British Columbia, in Canada.
One of my favorite places in the world.
Yes, we have the commonality of having great skiing resorts, you know, in our backyards, and so that's always a nice thing.
Yeah, we don't have an ocean, but
it's but cold. I don't go swimming in it in the winter, anyways. So
yeah, okay. Vikram, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, your education.
I'm an academic. I'm an associate professor in chemical and biological engineering at the University of British Columbia. And so that is where I call home. I work and research on biotechnology and its application to solve problems in manufacturing and environmental remediation. So that's really the focus of the academic group. One of the things that I have done, partly because of my graduate training at MIT, is to always try and seek commercial utility for the technologies that we develop. Through research, there is this constant endeavor to see whether you could translate the research out, whether you can mobilize it. And one of the most effective ways to do it, well, two of the most effective ways is to collaborate with industry, which I do a lot of. And so a lot of the problems in my research problems that we tackle in my laboratory are in collaboration with industry. And in many unique cases, we are also having the opportunity to create spin-off companies. And so through that work, I've been quite fortunate to be an entrepreneur, successfully spun off two companies. And both of them have been in the realm of environmental technology and remediation.
Okay. Well, it's you're beating the odds, I would say. That's a difficult thing to bring a research into, to bring it alive.
Certainly, and I think it comes because of training, but you do need to make a conscious effort. And so being applied scientists, that's what engineers are. So me being a chemical engineer, I'm firmly of the opinion, I may be a minority in academia, but there's some very successful academic entrepreneurs. During COVID, we were very fortunate that in the United States, a lot of the successful companies actually came from university research. And so the idea there is, why work on something that is just then going to be in a thesis that sits on a bookshelf gathering dust? Whereas, wouldn't it be nice, both for the individual developing the technology, but also society as a whole, if that technology does see the light of day and actually transforms lives on the street?
Yeah, that's one of my side hustles, is working with a group of people that searches academic research to see if it's be commercialized. And there is a lot of research out there, and a lot of it would be very difficult to commercialize. Things that pharmaceuticals, for example, that have to go through years of approvals. But what you're doing, like I said, you're really beating the odds by bringing these things actually to life.
No, indeed. And I often remark to my colleagues, I think one of the uniquenesses of the American innovative ecosystem, and this actually originated in the US, and so there is a lot for the US to be proud about this, is how does one actually finance risk-based endeavors and enterprises? And so the entire venture capital model. This is so unique to the United States, and they've done it so well for such a long period of time. And so, you know, in a way, what this tells you, the story of successful technology commercialization is not just the power of the idea, it's the entire ecosystem that supports it, both from, you know, in the case of life sciences, the regulation, the clinical trialing, all the way to financing it, and then even bringing it to the people, and then of course long-term you know, sustainability of that idea to make sure that it's actually a profitable venture. And so there's so many unique things that you learn through this experience.
Yeah, so one of the things that you're working on is something to help the mining industry. So tell us about that.
And so the roots of that story actually start with my previous endeavor. And so the previous endeavor was a company called Metabolic Technologies. And so what Metabolic Technologies was doing is we were developing a bioremediation solution that was exclusively tailored for the oil sands sector here in Alberta, Canada. And so as some of your listeners may be familiar with, that is, Canada is actually having one of the largest deposits of unconventional energy. I mean, this is not what you would say is conventional crude oil. And so it exists in a very unique form. They're called the oil sands. And a lot of processing has to be done in order to extract and then after that refine the oil that comes out. And so through that process, because of the extreme climatic conditions, a large amount of water is used. And so eventually what ends up happening with this water is it ends up being stored in oil sands tailings ponds. And this water, because of contacting the petroleum in there, has a lot of organic compounds. And so this is water that is what you would define as having above regulatory limits of contaminants. Many of these are carcinogenic. They create all sorts of environmental and health challenges. So how do you break these compounds down and release the water? And so as part of that, we first studied that environment. We identified microorganisms from that very environment that can chew those compounds down. And then we scaled up that and created a deployment mechanism so that we can address and actually practically deploy them in the field. The biggest challenge that faces biotechnology, in particular when you're looking at large-scale problems, is how do you scale up and deploy? And so we spent quite a bit of time on that. And during that experience, and so eventually Metabolic got acquired by a company called Alonia, which was a grand result for us. But through that experience, what I learned is that oil sands tailings ponds, they're often called the sixth Great Lake here in Canada.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you often think of sixth Great Lake, it's massive in scale. And then through your conversations with some of these individuals on site, you know, one of them just remarked to me, he said, do you know that this pales in comparison to, you know, what the mining industry is producing? And that really piqued my interest. And so once you come back from one of these field visits, you immediately start going and start searching on the internet, how big are mining tailing spawns? And they are absolutely enormous. So you're talking of totally around the world about 200 trillion gallons of water in mining tailing spawns. It's astronomical in terms of, you know, what those numbers actually mean. And then when you start looking at, you know, diving into that problem, you know, and doing more detailed analysis, what you find out is that it's a large volume of water. It needs to be cleaned. But remarkably, that water also is a tremendous opportunity just because of, you know, the duration for which the water is sitting there. It is now filled with metals. These natural processes, leaching processes take place, and there's a lot of very useful, valuable metals. So now if you look at the world today, where we have a very unique situation, we have the problem of waste, but we also have this challenge of an unprecedented demand for metals, particularly when you look at net zero. And so what attracted me to the problem is that the problem, which is mining waste, water in tailings ponds, all of these acidic runoffs, they actually are the solution to society's challenges. And so we started working on this problem in 2016. again, you know, I'm the way I have, you know, the common joke I make is that if you know, you're like that individual with a hammer, you go around all around the place trying to look for a nail, right? And so being a specialist in biotechnology, how does one bring that that type of a system to try and solve a problem of mining waste? And so we started doing some fundamental research on that. And then by 2021, we had developed two unique pieces of technology that are able to address the problem. Now, this was, of course, done at the laboratory scale in a university.
Yeah.
And at that point in 2021, we said, this is a promising solution. Now let's actually make it a commercially viable solution. And that was the moment we decided to spin off the technology into a company called Tursa Earth Innovations. And today it's been almost 3 years now, and Tursa has rapidly scaled up what we had done at UBC. It is much faster, much more efficient, and in fact today we are building demonstration units. These are 40-foot shipping containers that can be taken to any mine site anywhere in the world, and the intent there is you go and start treating the water and any liquid effluent stream that comes out, extract valuable metals, produce clean water. Because you're using biology, it is much more decarbonized than any solution that the mining industry is currently dealing with.
So I take it that your process is much different than normal water treatment plants.
It is very different. So I will highlight a few of these differences, you know, and of course, you know, I have to be careful. I'm an academic, so, you know, I sometimes start speaking geek and nerd, and you know, that kind of gets, so I'll try and keep it as high level as possible.
Okay.
But of course, the very first fundamental difference is that we're using biology, and it's a biological solution that is working very well at large scales. That itself is a huge deviation from any of the other water treatment processes that are used by the mining industry. The second big difference is that we are simultaneously achieving metal removal and water treatment. And when I say metal removal, we are able to extract metals in a form that can be sold for revenue. So when we are treating, say, a mixture of copper, gold, and silver, our technology is able to pull out pure copper, pure gold, pure silver. If you look at other existing technologies, they're usually pulled out, and if it's biology, it's usually pulled out in the form of a metal sulfide. And metal sulfides don't have a lot of value. They still need, there's a lot of processing that needs to happen before you can generate any value. And then the third big difference is that we have moved away from this model of build large and build big. So most wastewater treatment operations, they are what you would call batch-based processes. They require enormous amounts of capital expenditures and then operating expenditures to essentially build and operate these systems. We have moved away from that. For us, we have looked at modularity. Modularity gives you, and when I say you, it's the mining company, the flexibility to deploy this as the needs of your site are. It does not entail CapEx and OpEx at the scales that a conventional process would do. And then the other big advantage is that it is continuously operating. So the shipping container that I mentioned is a module. So water continuously flows in. There is constant treatment and extraction of metals. And then the water comes out. It meets all environmental regulations. So you can choose if you want to recycle the water or release it. And let's say you're a large mine versus a small mine. A large mine will just use a stack of multiple shipping containers, whereas a small mine would just use one. And so that's how we have addressed scalability of the solution. So there are some major deviations and differences in how we operate as well as deploy the technology for mining companies compared to, say, a traditional operation, which requires a lot of money to run, a lot of maintenance, and it requires a lot of, you know, careful monitoring because of how these systems, how finicky they are, especially at very large scales.
Okay. So you mentioned metals, but what about metalloids?
So in terms of what we talk about in terms of metal, so it is a diverse group of things that we are able to pull out. So in terms of what we have tested, so we have worked with mining companies. So metals and metalloids, of course, you know, depending on you know what you're looking at the periodic table, the way we look at it is we look at standard reduction potentials of these different elements, and we use that as a metric to pull out and what we can and cannot pull out. So in terms of typical metals, what we have done successfully, and I will list them, and these are done in the elemental form. So valuable metals: copper, gold, silver, molybdenum, platinum group metals, such as, you know, platinum, palladium, iridium. Then in terms of contaminants and toxicants, we have been able to pull out arsenic and selenium quite successfully. And then another very important metal that we have been able to pull out, this time in the carbonate form, is lithium carbonate. So we have specifically targeted these types of metals. Now, of course, when you look at conventional metalloids, you know, so, you know, when you're looking at silicon, for example, is a very good metalloid, depending on, you know, what the system and how it's put into. We have not looked at that from the perspective of, you know, we want to pull every single thing on the periodic table. We have consciously gone after certain types of metals. This is dictated by mining operations, who we've been able to work with. And that has been the focus so far.
Okay, that's pretty awesome. So how many of these units have you deployed, or how many times has it been deployed?
So right now we have built one of these units. So, you know, being a startup company, we have been, you know, we have to build this sequentially. But really what we are doing right now is there have been some very promising recent developments where we are now expanding our footprint, particularly in terms of building and deploying. So currently there is one such 40-foot shipping container that we are building. This is essentially located at our facility in Vancouver. So it's what we call an urban pilot. Okay. So this that's our test pad for all incremental innovations that we make. We recently were announced as one of the winners of the BHP Global Water Challenge. We are working with BHP towards a field demonstration in 2024. We have similarly worked with another mining company in British Columbia called Skeena Resources. And so we have signed an MOU with them to again deploy and demonstrate the technology in the field there. And so at the moment, what we are doing in 2024, we will be looking at building and deploying about 2 to 3 of these units at some of these sites that I mentioned. And then through 2024, when you test it in the field, when in some extremes of environmental conditions, for instance, you take the learnings from that exercise, and then you simply use that to A, optimize the process, but then you also learn about the logistics required to take this to extreme and, you know, far-flung places around the planet. And so by 2025, we will be in a position where, and, you know, through that, we're also building some strategic relationships as we speak to mass produce these units and then try and deploy this as extensively as possible. So 2025 is when we will be in that position. That requires a significant upscaling of our manufacturing activities, and that's something that we are doing, building towards at least in the next 12 months.
Okay. So there's some of the passive treatment methods that use a biological approach. So how is yours different than the ones that I'm thinking of?
Yes, and I will use an illustrative example specifically to show you how things are different. So let's take the example of selenium, for example. Okay. Now, selenium, and this is an important issue, is because it has now become a transboundary issue between the United States and Canada.
Yeah.
And so when you look at selenium is toxic in the water. That toxic species, it exists in the oxidized form, selenite, selenate. These are the two toxic species. A lot of research and development has gone into addressing the selenium problem. Now, tech here in Canada has spent well in excess of $1 billion pursuing different technologies to try and clean up that challenge. The one technology that they found promise that they are now scaling up. And so they were one of the very first entities on the planet to actually study the toxic chemistry of selenium inside organisms. It's remarkable how much fundamental research that some of these activities have provided to us. And so in that, they use a bacteria. The goal there is the oxidized form of selenium is toxic. So let's reduce it to the elemental form or even more reduced than that. And that's when the toxicity is significantly reduced, goes away. And so the microorganisms are essentially using selenium as a terminal electron acceptor because the selenite, selenate, they want to reduce those species. Now, when you take a microorganism, so the type of microorganism they use, again, they're deployed in a tank-based method, right? So the microorganism is in that milieu, the water with selenium is flowing through, and then the microorganism has to go and then act on that oxidized selenium species. Now, if you look at any microorganism, it has evolved to do one thing and one thing very well, which is to survive and multiply. Now, when you give it something that is not a conventional food source, it is going to take a bit longer to essentially use selenite and selenate as a terminal electron acceptor. So it goes through several steps in metabolism, and bacterial metabolic systems are very complex. You're talking of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of extra reactions before you get to that final terminal electron acceptor step. So the microorganisms take their time to reduce the selenium. And then, as you can imagine, if there is, you know, the microorganisms have to also adapt to break down selenium in the environment is because it's toxic to them as well. And so it's that combination of the toxicity and the long time it takes to break down and reduce those species that makes the processes slow. And then since it's, the bacteria is in that milieu, you have to essentially have this as a batch-based process. They are tough to scale up. So that's the reality of conventional processes. The process that we have, so as I mentioned, I didn't actually go into the details as to what the technologies were, but one of the steps we have is a unique piece of technology called a microbial fuel cell. And the fuel cells that we have developed at TERSA, they are truly unique in the world is because they are continuous microbial fuel cells, so they operate continuously. And we have, among other things, engineered the bacteria to be more efficient, and we have also done quite a bit of process engineering to allow a separation of these different metals. So we can take a dirty mixture and pull out and separate all of these metals at source. So let's say selenium is now going in. In our process, the microorganism is doing what it loves, which is to consume a food source and then produce, you know, its primary metabolic products. One of those products is an electron. And so this type of bacteria is very unique. It produces excess electrons. What we do is we take the electron from the anode, we shuttle it to the cathode via a circuit. And at the cathode, you have the dissolved oxidized selenium species. They directly accept the electron and get reduced. So all of those excess steps that are involved in your metabolic pathways in the bacteria, you circumvent them. So it's a much faster process. You are direct, so bacteria is doing what it does best, and then it is producing the electron that is directly used in the reduction of selenium. And because it's a continuous flow-based process, this is operating at, you know, so it's a module, as I mentioned, and so the scalability is actually very, very predictable. So our processes are the same efficiency at all scales. And so we have seen some excellent removal efficiencies for selenium. They're in the high 90%. We're able to bring it down well below what the regulatory limits are. And we're doing it very efficiently, continuously. So this is a fundamental difference from what is being used with conventional biology. And so the answer I often give is that we are using biology, but we are deploying it in a very unique model compared to the conventional mode of deployment.
Okay. That's great. And one of these days, you're likely to sell this technology, as you've done before. Is it difficult parting ways with one of your children?
Not really. So this is the case where, you know, the child remains in the house and actually becomes a partner and helps with the household income. So the way we deploy this is through a services based model. And so we are a technology company, and so we have brought a lot of concepts from the tech industry into mining, which is new. But really, what we're doing is, rather than selling a piece of the technology, the idea there is you sign an end user license agreement with a mine site. And as part of that, you are offering them a service. So they pay you a service fee to use the technology to address their waste stream. Now, in many cases, let's take a typical example where it also extracts metals and it's reducing their carbon footprint. We then enter into a revenue sharing agreement about, you know, the metals that have been pulled out and the carbon offsets that are derived. And so the archetypical model is service fee plus metal revenue sharing plus carbon offset sharing. And so that's how we are deploying it. We are not actually parting with the technology at all. That's not ideal from a tech deployment perspective.
That's great. That's great. So this container is going to get deployed somewhere. What period of time do you think it'll be deployed? Is it like life of mine and beyond, or is it an experimental stage?
No. So in terms of the scale, the idea of the demonstrations in 2024.
Yeah.
is to test out, you know, issues such as, you know, first of all, every mine site will have some unique operations on their site. And so one of the things is that you want to make sure that this integrates as seamlessly and easily for the mine site as possible. And so those will be certain aspects that we are investigating in this demonstration. The big thing, of course, is permitting. What types of information that we will collect that is going to help with permitting and collecting a dossier of environmental information that is then going to assist the mines in their bond payments, liabilities, insurance, because that's also critical data that the mining company would need from this as well. And so this is information we'll be collecting. And then, of course, evaluating the technology, how does it need to be tweaked? Are there certain conditions in the mine that you simply cannot recreate in a laboratory setting? And so, you know, how does the technology need to be tweaked so that it functions under those conditions? So all of that is taking place next year, as I mentioned. The learnings from that is essentially going to use to iterate and refine the model. So earlier demonstrations in the early half of 2024 will look very different in terms of what we anticipate collecting from those trials compared to, say, something later half of 2024. And then through that exercise, you then start learning, you're getting your supply chains in order, your logistics are getting placed. And so that's the process that we're going through. Each shipping container, once we build them, that shipping container is the same as a commercial unit. So the demonstration and the commercial unit are essentially identical. Where differences in scale arise is the number of shipping containers that we will deploy. And so, as you can imagine, there is going to be a significant injection of resources needed to start scaling up manufacturing of these units. And that's what we will start tackling later half of 2024, early 2025. And then, of course, there is, of course, organic growth of the technology as you are deploying. So in year one, we anticipate deploying a certain number of units. It increases in year two, and that's how we will keep increasing over the next few years. The number of units, of course, it depends. You know, we've already, one of the key pieces that we've looked at is where do we deploy ideally first, which types of companies. And so that's a key part of the exercise right now, engaging with mining companies. To their credit, mining companies are playing ball. They're having very enthusiastic conversations. All of us want to solve this problem, and all of us actually want to see this problem go away. And all of us are believers in waste is the new wealth. So how do we take waste and generate as much wealth from it as possible? And so that it's good for the planet, it's good for these companies, it's good for us.
Yeah, for sure. I think the only thing we didn't touch on so far is ARD. So
Yes.
Do you have a solution for ARD?
Yes, and so ARD is the same. So when I say mining effluents, ARD is one of them. So what is ARD? It's just an extremely acidic liquid that has quite a bit of dissolved metals in there. And so ARD, just as you would with any other liquid stream, you flow the ARD through our system. All the metals from the ARD are pulled out in step one. In step two, we have the continuous, so it's a closed loop lime-free neutralization. That's what our second biotechnology does. And so we neutralize the acidity of the water, and then what ends up coming out is clean water that meets all regulations. All the valuable metals have been pulled out. You don't create that gypsum slag waste that is the bane of neutralization. And that's how we treat ARD. So ARD, what types of waste streams have we been very successful? And we have extensively tested ARD, water in pit lakes, water in tailings ponds, solutions coming out from tailings reprocessing facilities, as I mentioned, lithium brine. And so we have seen tremendous efficiencies and use cases proven out for these different types of liquid streams that I've just enumerated.
Okay, well, that's great. I hope your company gets to be massively successful, because I think there's a real need for it worldwide.
No, thank you. Thank you for the kind words.
Yeah. And I think I've asked all the questions that I had. Is there something you wanted to talk about that we haven't already discussed?
Well, generally speaking, right? Why is, so, a question that I often get, and this is usually the very first question, when we are talking to mining companies, and we've kind of peripherally touched upon it, but a lot of mining companies, they start off the conversation saying that, look, your technology is absolutely fascinating, but, everybody has been promising this for the last 30 years, and, how are you different? And we kind of touched upon some of the key points. The big difference is, of course, we have been extremely fortunate. We're a product of our times, and synthetic biology and the ability to identify biological systems and then manipulate them and deploy them we've never had that much capability ever in the history of science and engineering. And so we are very much fortunate products of our times, and so we use these new tools, something which previous attempts just simply did not have. And the second thing that makes us different is that we have a very simple maxim in the company. It's that, yes, we are technology, we are biotechnology, but you should never be enamored by the biology in the system. Oftentimes, there are a lot of companies, biotech companies, that spend hundreds of millions of dollars on research and development because they're trying to go after the perfect biological solution. When you take any biology into a mine site, given how diverse and challenging these environments are, you usually, so best is the enemy of good. And oftentimes the best becomes the best microbe, for instance, ends up becoming a species that you simply cannot deploy. And so people incorrectly focus on the biology as opposed to focusing on the process engineering and the scale up. And that is something which has been very unique. And so if you look at our intellectual property portfolio, yes, biology is a key part of it, but a lot of it, the vast majority of it, is what is the process engineering that we have done. So the good old fashioned engineering, as we call it, that never goes away. Yes, we are using some very high powered tools, and it's how do you combine them with the singular focus on scale, and that's what has differentiated us from the others. And the proof is in the pudding. So when we get samples from some of these mining companies, we do systematic testing of these samples using our system. We send these things out to validated third party analytical services, and the results are often very surprising for these companies. They say, oh wow, you're able to treat it. In one example, they sent us solutions ARD that was close to zero pH, almost negative pH. And they thought that, nothing would be able to withstand this. In our system, it was able to do just fine. In fact, the materials of construction we use is high density polyethylene. So the acidity, doesn't matter how acidic it is, it just does not do anything to the system. So problems such as, you know, corrosion and breakdown of the material. None of that happened in our system. And in fact, they performed much faster at lower pHs because, you know, that's how the system is. When you look at the phase diagrams and the rate at which the microorganism is able to generate these electrons, it actually functions much better at lower pHs. And so that was something which was nice validation. So, you know, when we get these results and we share it with our partners and colleagues in the mining industry, there is definitely a lot of happiness and enthusiasm when you see results of this type.
Well, that's great. That's really, really great. It's good to find the innovation that's happening in the mining industry, because a lot of people think there is no innovation, which is frustrating because obviously there is, but it's innovations like this that is really so pleasant to hear about.
And it is. And the answer, as you know, when I started off the conversation today, it's you'll be amazed how problems from one industry have been solved by another industry several decades ago. It's about the cross-pollination of ideas and technologies that is going to get us there. The mining industry, because of how large it is, there are, of course, you know, huge seismic scale adoption challenges. But by no means is that going to be an excuse for not to at least trial out some of these innovative solutions. And so we've been quite fortunate. The companies that we've been working with, extremely progressive. They understand, you know, the need to innovate. It is actually critical to survival as we move into the future. And that has also been a useful ally for us. Is there is a lot of social ESG type pressures that are playing a significant role. And another unique thing about TIRSA is that we have really looked at regulation and government stakeholder engagement from the bottom up. And so we have a team that is working very closely with First Nations partners, with provincial governments, permitting and regulatory agencies, because that is going to be the ultimate determinant for how effectively these solutions are going to be deployed. So we have many allies, the mining industry, of course, First Nations, governments, and then, you know, fellow innovators, because many times, you know, it's many innovations have to come together to deliver a whole package for the mining industry to adopt. And so that has been a very pleasant development in the last 3 years for sure.
Great. Vikram, I really appreciate you spending some time with us. And one of my goals of having this podcast is to make myself a little bit smarter. And thanks to you, I'm just a little bit smarter today. So I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And before I let you go, any parting words?
The one statement I use, which, you know, of course, is, you know, waste is the failure of the imagination. And so, you know, waste is the new wealth. And it's about time that we start. And this maxim applies across industries, not just mining, everything. You look at polymers, microplastics, everything. And, you know, how do we develop technologies that reassess our relationship with waste? That is going to be critical for the future of humanity.
Perfect. Perfect. I appreciate that. I know you're a busy guy and I won't keep you any longer, but you know, thanks so much for coming on the podcast with me today. And I wish you all the best and all the successes in the world for your technology.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that's it. I'm Brian, and this is Behind the Scenes with Brian. Until next time, keep on rockin'.